Okay, welcome everyone. I guess we'll just get started here. My name is Tim Davis. I'm here to speak about information protection, otherwise known as the RMS product from Microsoft. I am the lead program manager for the on-premise AD RMS product, which is a part of Windows Server, and an Azure ADRM offer, which is our cloud offering in this space. And I've been working on this product for about 2 years. I just wanted to share like how fantastic it is to work on a security product for me. One of the things I'm really enthusiastic about is that security is just such a technically demanding, precise thing. So there's a lot of great things as an engineer I get to work on. But at the same time, we're hugely investing in making it easy to use. Because one of the classic problems that we have is the more secure we make it, often the harder it is for our end customers to actually get access to the features. So it's one of the fun things for the last few years for me is kind of balancing how a security product can work and actually how we make this an easy to deploy, easy to administer, and easy to use end user experience. So I'm going to spend just a few minutes at a very high level talking about what we're doing as a business group. My colleague Dan Plastina gave a more detailed presentation a few days ago on the RMS roadmap, so I won't spend too much time on that because I think many of you attended that session as well. But I will take questions along the way, so please feel free to raise your hand, and I will clarify anything or give some background context to keep us moving forward. So the first thing is protection is about any file type. We've obviously realized that the world is not just a Microsoft Office file format anywhere. It probably really never was. But one of the things we've actually focused on the last couple of years is how do we extend encryption and rights, what we call rights management, to actually any sort of file type in our system. We also recognize that the world has changed quite a bit, and people access information on mobile devices, tablets, non-Windows workstations, which is also something that has been a huge set of challenges for us as we deal with different types of security domains and internet sort of authentication protocols in our products. Collaboration is actually becoming the dominant use of information protection. We like to think about securing my data is sort of like in a vault. But data in a vault just really isn't very interesting. It has its place, things like BitLocker and other sort of storage-based encryption. But really, the true value of information protection for me is when I actually can send data to someone else and have confidence along the way, wherever it goes, that encryption and that protection is persisted with the data, and the people I share with can easily use it. It doesn't help me to lock these things up and have it be inaccessible. The other reality is people share with business colleagues, and they also share with social colleagues. So in a world where we actually all work in virtual teams, we have extended partner networks, I can no longer guarantee that everyone is inside my corporate enterprise, perhaps not an AD user. I may be sharing with colleagues who are Gmail users. I may be sharing with colleagues who are external partners, but they're very transient relationships. So some of the classic ways that we collaborate are very expensive. So we've been trying to drive down the cost of that collaboration for information protection, so it's not something that requires a heavy IT investment to enable. We also recognize that not everyone is ready for the cloud. People have different levels of tolerance of risk and speed of migration. Obviously, we're investing heavily in the cloud as Microsoft, but we're also looking at the existing infrastructure people have invested in and operate, quite possibly with great happiness or success, and making sure the interoperation cases are possible and easy to use. As a security product, we also recognize that a tight control for certain customers of their security structures is also important, which is, one of the balance points that we make between ease of use, ease of administration, versus a great deal of granularity of precision of how you control your encryption keys and how they're used. We also know that trust is an important issue. Actually verifying, and so the classic tools that we have from on-premise world for audit logs and access control and network perimeter security don't exactly apply to the cloud, but the functionality or the logical functionality has to persist. So we've made tons of investment in both building a very trustworthy data center infrastructure to run your security backbone, as well as giving you visibility in how we run it and how people use your data and use your encryption technology. And last is encryption and rights management. It's only a small piece of the puzzle. Putting a file wrapper around a piece of content is a great start, but end users need a much more richer business experience. Those are things like classification. Those are things like policy and data retention and lifecycle management. So as a platform provider, we make sure that we have a breadth of coverage and that my partners can actually go in and build much more vertically oriented solutions that will be customized and relevant to each of your businesses. So just a brief recap, I'm not going to spend much time on this, but there's a number of different ways that my product can be used. We're going to kind of touch upon these in greater detail, but everything from simple Bio 365, information protection is built into the enterprise SKUs, E3, E4. It's also been purchased as a standalone SKU. We also have on-premise, what we call connector technology, so ways to bring your existing Exchange, SharePoint, file servers into a kind of what we call a hybrid configuration with our online service. We also offer, as I mentioned, very tight controls you can exercise over your key use. Again, from a security key standpoint, many of my customers have controls and compliance requirements of how they actually generate and manage their keys. So bringing some of that functionality to the cloud as well to actually make this more of a seamless migration of how you have invested in existing processes and how those can apply to an online experience. And we're also recognizing that a comprehensive solution requires just generic file protection, as we call it, which means any device, any time, this data can be read, but still maintain the protection that's relevant to what you consider important data. Oh, I'm sorry, my clicker is a bit funky here. Here we go. Okay, so particularly the session goals I have for today, I'm going to call it a survey, kind of a of all of the ways we actually can use ADRM, or Azure Active Directory Rights Management. And I'd like you to be able to feel that you can go back to your work, know what this is about, how to use it, look at the kind of the simple topology options that might make sense for you. As a starting point, feel that you can set this up, try it, and kick the tires, and hopefully use it for your enterprise. So we look at across the modern RMS. And actually, quick question. How many people here have actually been using the ADRMS product over the years? Anyone? Just a few here? Okay. So we like to think the ADRMS product had its day, but it had kind of gotten a bit static. So there's been a huge reinvestment in my team for the last few years to really modernize that product, bring it to the cloud, fix a number of the core issues which I think were precluding widespread use and actually effective use of the product. And then we talk about this modern RMS offer in taxonomy of the workloads as well as the customer types of people who are looking at these things. Again, email, a very common and a business requirement to actually secure my email, rights management, classic things if you're from the do not forward type of operations at Microsoft Exchange, limited distribution lists, kind of a concept that I hope is familiar to you. SharePoint, again, as a content management system, that's the premier Microsoft workload, No 365, recognize that this is a key integration point. So if we look at the classic pieces for cloud-hesitant customers, many of these workloads have been RMS-enabled since 2007 and 2010 in the Office products, as well as the Windows Server FCI product, which is a classification file server, dynamic access control type of product. As we go forward and people bring those workloads to online, we actually have a way to mix and match these topologies and still maintain forward or backward and forward compatibility, if you will, with your existing investment and allow you to sort of choose the type of customer that you are currently at. Some customers may never go to the cloud in full. That's a fine topology for me. And also I have customers who are wholesale jumping right into O365 and kind of getting there as fast as they can and discarding their physical infrastructure. From my standpoint, I just sell information protection, so I'm actually happy that all those scenarios work. Okay, we'll start with a kind of a walkthrough of actually how an end user would experience RMS. Starting out with Office 2013, the in-market product from Word, someone just starts typing in. I don't know why anyone would actually ever sell a widget anymore, but so be it. And then what they can do is if this is considered a sensitive document, your desktop user would decide, oh, this document has confidential forecast information or whatnot, and go to the file menu and choose to restrict access. And what you can see here is the Contoso NA is our sample tenant. With a couple of clicks, you can actually apply what we call an information policy. This is a preset set of options that to govern the usage rights, which are things like, can I print this document, can I save it, can I edit it, as well as which groups in my company can view it. Out of the box, we provide what we call company confidential, which means if this template is applied, it would require you to be able to log into to the company's directory, which is an AD or AAD type of authentication, and prove your identity before we would let the software decrypt the document. So essentially, it's a shortcut for users to create these information policies with minimal clicking. There are deeper options. We call them ad hoc policy, where a user can choose restricted access and specifically decide the groups or users or the types of information restriction they would like to choose. Generally speaking, though, most of my customers in the past have created these templates, and that's the simplified user experience that's relevant for most of our cases. So once that document protection has been applied, you can see we highlight this. The document is now in a protected format. I'm just going to spend a minute talking about actually what this is, because I think there's a couple of important nuances. So one word, in this, in my example here, it's an XML format, you know, kind of a DOCX type of format that I'm sure you've all looked at over the years. What RMS allows Word to do is take the payload of the document, which is all the typing and the text and the formatting, everything that's confidential, and wraps it up in a strong encryption format called AES 128. That payload is then separated in the same document from what I call the encryption envelope, which is an unencrypted part of the document, which tells you where to go to open this. Essentially, the metadata actually allows you to contact my service and resolve the document's permissions and authorizations. The reason I call this out is it's quite important as we get into the actual service workflows in a few minutes, which is when you encrypt your document or you decrypt your document later, that document never goes to my service. That always stays on premise, so the data is never outside of your control or your end user's laptop, worktop, device, or whatever. It's an important design consideration for us to separate the encryption operations, which are essentially key exchange operations, versus actually being a content management system. So we think that's actually an important security point as I get into the details of where you have vulnerability and opportunity in your solutions. So once the user has chosen that, you can now see we effectively have kind of a title bar or watermark in the application, you know, indicating the user. They actually have this yellow bar is applied. Of course, you can close it. This document has now been in a encrypted file. If they go to save it, one example is I can save this document now anywhere. So again, another important distinction for me is classically you would actually have a file server with ACLs and sort of have a very secure system you would hope for confidential data. But now, since this encryption is now applied to the actual document itself, not just the storage container it lives in, you can actually put this on any public share. You know, I often joke, which is you could use, you know, use BitTorrent or some other protocol of your choice and publish all your documents there as long as you believe the document encryption is top-notch. So there's still tremendous value in access control for other purposes, but again, this document will now travel with its own security. So the encryption locks it down, and to access it requires now an authenticated transaction against our server. In this example, we choose SkyDrive. The user is going to save this document to SkyDrive. Widget Y plans, I suppose. Now, once the document's been saved to SkyDrive, I'm going to show you what it looks like when you go to open it. So the user later goes home. For example, the scenario perhaps is, I save this document to my SkyDrive because I'm going to be traveling, or I don't have a, for some reason I want to access this work from home or some other location. I save it to my personal SkyDrive account. But when I log in, I'm logging into with my O365 identity. This is the Contoso NA account. I don't know if that was familiar to anyone, but the on Microsoft account are the default O365 business identities. I see my plan, my widget Y document. I go to open it. And you can see this is, I mean, it's obviously a demo, so it's not quite as exciting as if I actually ran this in real code, but the document now, the encryption that I applied in my office environment has now been persisted to the SkyDrive container, and when I go to open it later, that same rights and permissions are have been transmitted with the document. So it's even if it had started in a BitLocker or some other storage vault container, I can take it out of that container, put it on a public or a semi-public consumer service, open it later, and my corporate level of protection is still intact. And you can also say, oh, one other thing I want to mention is This is all based on your identity and silent authentication. So another point is the user does not have to actually remember a document password. I don't have to call someone and tell them a nine-digit string to open my document. In fact, when everything is actually configured well with a modern RMS client like Office 2013 or an ISV application, it's actually almost transparent to the user. Almost meaning we're happy to remind the user this document has permissions that have been set relevant to your application or your corporate policies, but we don't want them to have to log in multiple times or really know anything is different. As long as they can prove that their identity is correct and that they're an authorized user of this document, this should all just happen transparently. Okay, well, lots of information flows through email. That's probably my number one place. Actually, I even write intellectual properties in my email client. So how does this integrate into Exchange? Again, similar example. I guess I've been working with Tejas on my widget project. Tejas is one of my colleagues back in Redmond. Again, here using Outlook 2013. There's some cool features that are built into Outlook 2013 if you're using them with the Exchange Online product. Is anyone familiar with DLP technology? Does that ring a bell, digital leakage protection? So essentially, this is a scanning technology which the Exchange server, which we'll see in a few moments, can actually, the administrator can configure policies saying, look for certain pattern or content or data in the content of an email body. And if you detect it, A, give the user some warnings or give them some information saying, hey, it looks like you're typing in a credit card number here. That's like a kind of a standard data match pattern. So first we educate the user that they may be leaking something which they may not be aware of. And second is, if they choose to continue with this, the RMS protection is automatically applied by the client. So this is a fantastic scenario, which is one of the important things we believe is the less the user has to do to keep secure, the better. You know, there are users who are experts who have high-value content they're aware of, but the majority of the time, we believe the user wants to do a good job, wants to keep company information confidential, but really it's going to get their job done. So anything we put in the way of that basic workflow tends to be a very high friction or a low success case. So we work with our Exchange and Office partners to basically streamline these processes and build it directly into the application stacks to take it out of the user's need to even pay attention to this and just help them with their job versus impede them in their job. And you can see here the DLP rule that the administrator has created automatically applies a confidential template to this document. And it is the other piece of, I don't know if it's clear from this slide, is this is also integrated into Exchange directly. So from Microsoft OA, Outlook Web Access, the information protection is still intact. So access your documents from OA, from whatever location you want. And if you can authenticate and see and you have permissions to this content, this email, you will get the correct experience. And OA is a web browser experience. So we have different levels of, I'll call sort of security assurance. We put this into the administrator's control. So I have some customers who choose to disable OA for protected content because they don't consider the web experience to be sufficiently strongly protected. Other customers consider it a perfectly fine scenario for their users. Okay, the other major workload for Microsoft SharePoint, also IRM integrated. We call them secure document libraries. So any document library in SharePoint can be configured to be part of the RMS protected domain. You can go to, as a SharePoint site administrator, you can go to your site and you can see that every file in your site can actually automatically have, so every file in your document library, if you enable it, can automatically have this RMS protection enabled. So the user will be warned when they're looking at a document online, they go to a browser experience, they'll open up a document, it'll open up what we call the Web Access Companion or the Web View, and we'll remind the user that this is a protected piece of content. If they want to edit the document or make changes, and they have permission, of course, we actually have them open it in Excel, so the editing experience launches the rich client browser, and that information is persisted, again, as the document leaves the SharePoint library and is synchronized or downloaded to your clients, that encrypted container still goes with the document, so the document still lives in the strongly protected rights management object. and the permission is transmitted again, so the document has never left the data center in an unencrypted or clear text format. So the protection started out in a secure data center and left the data center and arrived at a client, all with the security maintained. Okay, well, how does this work? We call it Azure ADRM. It's kind of a mouthful. We call it ADRM. Unfortunately, I'm not the marketing person who named it, but that's what we have. Today, the way we actually ship this product, it is an Azure service, but the first place it really shows up for most customers is part of the O365 suite. As mentioned earlier, this is part of E3, E4. If you buy those SKUs, you automatically get it as part of your subscription package. You also can buy it as an add-on, a premium SKU, which I'll get to in a second. As part of O365, this inherits the same SLA. We run this at 3 nines of uptime with strong requirements around availability and financially backed SLA. We run this worldwide. I run this in 4 regions, Europe, North America, Latin America, and an APAC region in Microsoft Azure data centers. So when we get down to the details, we can actually talk about the assurances we give you, which is you may choose the region to actually implement your protection if you have regulatory or other compliance requirements. So for example, some customers need to keep data in the EU. We give them an EU instance. They can set all their encryption technology to bear, and we never float that encryption material to and from Asia or to and from North America. This is actually probably relevant for U.S. customers today, but I thought I would mention it. We actually also have what we call government SKUs. In the United States, we have a separate Azure instance that we prepared for the federal government, the U.S. federal government. And there's actually been some talk of actually making this more common throughout the rest of the world, too. I know I've had customers ask, can I have an Azure instance in the U.K.? Because many governmental authorities want to keep their data effectively within their national borders, you know, generally for good reasons. So one of the asks I have upon you is, if this is an interesting requirement for your business, is to have nationalized data centers where you work for government organizations, I'd love to have this feedback go to our business and marketing groups to actually make that feature request and keep that on the list. Okay, so now, as I talked about, the ADRMS product, I think, first launched in 2003. And starting in about 2010, we really decided to fundamentally modernize the product and bring it to the cloud. So we have this trajectory of sort of the topologies, as I described them, of how this can work in both pure cloud environments, as well as mixed environments where people have existing IT, as well as for customers who are not quite comfortable with pushing too much data to the cloud in ways that can still enable secure collaboration and bring some features even to extend your existing functionality without fundamentally re-altering your IT practices. And that's, again, we just use these kind of, you know, red, yellow, green. I'm not sure that's entirely a fair color scheme, but the idea is you would select what kind of customer you are, and customers change over time. Customers can go to the cloud, go away from the cloud, kind of right-size the decision and the topology relevant to your organization. Oops. So I'm going to start with a cloud-bound organization who today has no ADRMS. So this would be a very typical customer, or at least a Microsoft customer. I think Active Directory are pretty widely deployed technology. Exchange and SharePoint would be typical uses of there. And on the devices, we usually would just, for example purposes, talk about rich clients. The Office clients have been integrated with ADRMS since 2003, as well as mobile devices with the Exchange Active Sync protocol. So Windows Phone, Samsung, Android phones, and some other devices have historically used EAS to communicate to Exchange. As you look at people going to the cloud, typically in our experience, one of the primary drivers is going to Exchange Online. So we talk about the mailbox migration, which may be all your mailboxes or a mixed set of mailboxes. That generally involves bringing your on-premise AD to the Azure Active Directory with your various technologies, DuraSync or FIM, and lighting up the workloads. So we bring some of these workloads here. This would be a kind of a very pure cloud-centric installation. I think this is not very many enterprises end up here quickly, but it is, you know, something we just for reference purposes we'll use. And then you get RMS as part of that. So what does that do for you? Well, as your users now become cloud-enabled users, Your devices and your Office apps now become cloud-enabled, so the login experience for Office and devices are now AAD-based, and that means the authentication can be done through the Azure Active Directory, which can be anything from what we call managed user accounts, where the passwords are natively stored into the Azure Active Directory. Or later I can talk about some federated cases where we still maintain your authentication on-premise with ADFS or some other technologies. And of course, RMS applications. Like third-party applications are like certain CAD vendors and some other specialized data is actually what we call pure RMS enabled. So they are fully rich clients even outside of the Microsoft Office suite. Okay, so let's get down to the actually how do you do this? Well, these are essentially the big steps, which is you enable the RMS service, then you actually go through your workloads, which I'm going to go through a bunch of clicks, and just show you simply how to do it and give you, you know, by the way, all these slides are on the Microsoft Tech Ed website, so you don't have to worry about catching too much of the detail. You can take this home and use it as a reference guide or print it out as you see fit with links to the TechNet documentation. Anyway, at the end of this, I think we'd hope to say, look, if you started these processes with a trial account, you know, with I think on the order of 15 minutes or so, you should be fully up and running with Azure Active Directory and having Exchange, SharePoint, and Office rich clients enabled for information protection. And for those of you who have ever installed the Windows AD RMS product, this is pretty dramatic. That's typically one of the harder products for customers to install. So we've put a tremendous amount of work trying to make this a very low-cost, low-friction experience for the IT administrators to set up. Okay, first thing, assuming you've actually started up with a trial service of Exchange, O365, like when it said the E3 SKU, which I think has a 30-day trial, go to your Microsoft Online portal. You log in as your tenant administrator. And down in service settings, you can see the standard workloads, mail, link, whatnot. Choose rights management, manage. This is all a single sign-in experience. It takes you to a dedicated page. We start out the product as unactivated. Since it is an enterprise product, we generally require the customer to go ahead and actively enable it. And we give you a confirmation dialog with a little bit of education, which is this is the foundation for using it with Exchange Online and SharePoint Online. Magic happens. There's a set of workloads. This usually takes perhaps 15 to 30 seconds. And there's a secure transaction which starts out using your administrator credentials, passes to our Azure service in a secure, authenticated manner, enables the appropriate settings, and then we actually provision your tenant key material, which is basically your encryption keys now get provisioned inside of my service in our secure data centers. And hopefully within a minute or two, it brings you back to the dialogue, which now you're good to go. And again, this is, you know, I'm not sure it's quite one click, but I think within a few clicks and, you know, on the order of a minute versus I think setting up an AD RMS product would probably be on the order of several hours to a few days, depending on the complexity of your environment. It's one of the huge advantages for us of using the Azure Active Directory as well, which simplifies the configuration tremendously for these products. Now, SharePoint Online, you are a site collection administrator. The way the IRM or RMS feature is implemented in SharePoint Online is it's enabled for your entire tenant, so that will be chosen by the site collection administrator, and it becomes an available feature for each of your individual sites. So the site, again, going to the portal, you'd expect your site collection administrator to go here, look at the additional settings in the SharePoint Admin Center, go down to the Information Rights Management section. A bit of information here. Again, by default, this is disabled. You would actually go through as a SharePoint administrator, set the product on, push OK, and you're good to go. Now, you can see this will be enabled for a site administrator to actually go to your document library, choose the information rights management permissions. And now it creates some fairly cool stuff. So this is built to be generally transparent to the end user. So the end user shouldn't have to actually go decide whether to protect a particular document or not. That's been configured for them on behalf of their site. So you as an administrator would say, this library is directed for secure content. Everything we drop into here or check out of here should actually have this encryption enabled through this tool. Now, what we actually allow you to do is further customize what those permissions are. So this is effectively the first place we're going to see today of a customized information policy. You can see if you click on this, you have a setting of options. You can prohibit people from uploading content that is not IRM protectable. So you could say, I don't take anything I can't have a native protected application on, which really would say you'd have to be using Office or some other Microsoft ISVs enabled application. And you can also decide which are the standard rights. Out of the box, we tend to keep it as a read-only write. If this is a secure document library, so when you check it out, you can only read those documents. You, of course, can customize that based on what you think is appropriate. And this is the other interesting thing is the expiration of the document. So another, I think, great feature of RMS, because it's an encrypted container and it's always based on your authentication, we give you a license to use this document for a period of time. Most customers don't ever set an expiration point in their document, but there are lots of compliance and regulatory cases or just other business cases when I want to say, after 30 days, this document should go away. This is no longer relevant. I don't want to keep track of it. I don't want to have to actually just prove that I've actually deleted the document. So essentially, it's a way to lock the document and have it age out of your system automatically. So even if a user grabs this document, puts it on their laptop, and leaves your company or loses that laptop, we can actually set the longest period of time that document will be available, and they'll have to come back and either refresh the document or the document can permanently expire. Come back, meaning log on again. Down at the bottom, you can see these documents can be authorized or licensed to an individual, which is the default, or to a group. So you may actually have a work group. So the default settings are I pull a document out of SharePoint. The document is only authorized to me, Tim Davis. And if I give it to one of my colleagues, they will get essentially an access denied type of message, or you don't have authorization or permissions to this document. And then if I want to share it, I have to check it back into the SharePoint site, bring that content back to Central, and my colleague would actually get I would send them a link, and they would actually go check that document out, which is actually a really interesting scenario because it really gives you very fine-grained audit control of how a document can transition from user to user. That may not work for everyone. So the alternative, you can create a SharePoint group. Everyone in that group can actually have access to the document. So if I have a group called my work group or my R&D team or whatever, that those documents from that SharePoint secure document library will always be authorized for everyone in that group. So it actually allows a bit more peer-to-peer sharing if that's a scenario that's important for your enterprise. Okay, next workload, Exchange Online. A little more text here. There's a couple of PowerShell commands to write. In a couple of months, these things should go away, but for the time being, you have to actually log into the Exchange Remote PowerShell. You have to be an administrator to set these things. And without boring you and reading this out loud, basically, you connect to Exchange in your PowerShell session, and then type in a couple of commands. This command tells Exchange where to find the RMS server, so it's relevant if you can see the text here in the HTTPS sp-rms.na. That kind of gives you a clue. That's my namespace. So your Exchange server can actually direct itself to which region you created your RMS infrastructure in. So the other options you would typically see are AP for Asia Pacific, and EU, or SA. Those are the typical options. So as the administrator would have to know where you created your RMS subscription. I guess theoretically it's possible to have two regions, maybe Exchange in one region and maybe RMS in another. I'm not sure why you would do that, but it's transparent to us. You issue a few more commands. This basically configures Exchange and sets the IRM configuration, which turns on the features that are intrinsic to the Exchange server, transport rules, journaling, archiving. So again, one of the important things about the RMS experience in both SharePoint Online, Exchange Online, and other workloads is the data that flows through them can still be reasoned over. This is a super important point. If the data that flows into Exchange is purely an encrypted blob, like something like S/MIME, fantastic technology for certain purposes, but it's opaque to Exchange. So if you encrypt the document body or the content body of an Exchange message, you lose all sorts of things like virus scanning, malware scanning, journaling, archiving sorts of features. So what the Exchange implementation using RMS still provides you high security, and the document body is encrypted as it leaves the Exchange service. But inside the Exchange service, you can still run all the value-added features for indexing and whatnot. That is, I think, pretty cool stuff. And then bang, you'd be good to go. And an exchange would be lit up. And then separately, I could show you offline or after the session of how an Exchange DL digital leakage protection rule is set. So now that IRM is enabled, you can enable your OA, you can enable your transport rules saying scan for credit card numbers. I would like to say examples are, I want to have every email between my executives actually automatically encrypted, or emails to my legal group can automatically be encrypted. Again, referencing back to the Outlook 2013 example earlier, that is all transparent to the end user. So the end user doesn't have to make any decisions. They just know if they send email to HR, they send email to R&D, or whatever your rules are, the appropriate encryption policies can be applied. Okay, where does this work? Well, first of all, it works in Office 2013. This is our preeminent experience. We worked with the Office 2013 team for about 4 years to bring this off. So this has been a fantastic improvement compared to the old AD RMS configuration. Those of you who have had to futz with registry keys or setting authentication credentials or federation settings, this is kind of out of the box. Once RMS set up the Outlook or the core Office applications, just come up and work. They auto-discover, auto-configure, and auto-consume, meaning I don't have to do anything as an IT pro. It's supported for publishing out of the Office 2013 Pro Pack and for consumption out of the standard pack. So again, if you are paying for the premium package of Office or the OSUB E3 SKUs, anyone can publish content. But we also recognize in the enterprise you can't have islands of content that can't be read correctly, so we do allow every standard package to also have the same consumption features. They just can't create content. So you can read, reply, edit, but I can't generate new documents or new email from the standard packages. Office 2010 also works, a little bit more work. There's some registry keys that have to get set. Depending on what else you have running, you may need to install the sign-in assistant. We have a tool that configures those clients. It's deployable through GPO. And we also have something coming out in a few weeks which will streamline that process. And a few QFEs. We actually have some Windows QFEs that raise the security bar of the crypto engine that we use in that product. IP Viewer. I didn't actually bring much material today to talk about the IP Viewer application. I think my colleague Dan had gone through that in some detail. Did most of us catch Dan's talk? So about maybe a third or something. Okay, well, I'll just briefly describe it, and I can probably pull out a screenshot later. IP Viewer is a new application that we've created in our team that actually IP Viewer, an Information Protection Viewer, allows you actually a bunch of features to actually protect content directly from a Windows or actually one of our six supported mobile client platforms as well. So the demo I showed you earlier was an Office or a Word and a Outlook demo. IP Viewer is a standalone application, download it for free, and allows you to right-click, take any file, and protect it into the RMS system. So text files, JPEG, XML, CAD files, whatever's CSV reports, whatever's relevant to your company, users can still add protection even if the native application doesn't support it. We're also bundling some of these QFEs and registry configurations into that tool. So when a user downloads that and deploys it, they'll just be done. They won't have to go through and manually tweak any reg keys after that. Okay, well, how do you get it? Well, it's a trial account. It's free. It's free for 30 days. I hope that it's pretty easy. I think the online experience for creating user accounts and setting the IRM plan, it should be a couple of clicks here. And, I actually want to put upon a key point, too. One of the other fantastic benefits of AADRM compared to ADRMS, which may not make sense unless you've tried it, is cross-organization collaboration. It's a fantastic new feature. So out of the box, for two companies who are both O365 users, you know, my standard example is Contoso and Fabricam, now they can exchange secure, protected information without any IT pro configuration. In the old days, in the Windows AD RMS product, you needed to do something like an ADFS trust, which is frankly pretty expensive, or there were some specialized configurations available in the ADRMS product, which we called Trusted User Domains, which was essentially a way of like a PKI trust exchange for a signing key. Online, we enable that all by default. So out of the box, if you want to collaborate with a partner company, you specify them. I'm Tim at Contoso, and I'll say my colleague Nancy at Fabricam. If I send her an email or document, and she's an O365 user, bang, she's good to go. There's no extra configuration required. Her Office 2013 system will automatically authenticate if she's authorized to read the content. It will stay protected. And you, as the IT pro, get to track all of this. So I'll talk about it in a minute, but we have detailed usage and tracking logs that we collect in the service. So you can actually watch the information flow throughout your company, even to partner companies, which I think is actually pretty cool. Another important feature is that is actually built into Office 365 tenants for this cross-tenant collaboration. And we also are going to make a free offering. So again, if I want to share securely with a partner company who has not chosen to buy O365 or AADRM, I have a way for the end user, the individual user, to sign up for a free account and still maintain all the protection. So you can actually be assured that as you use information protection with RMS, your recipients actually are not blocked or impeded in their job. A couple more links. One file type I did not mention earlier, PDF. PDF is a critical file type for most of my customers. We've partnered with a great company named Foxit. They have a IRM-enabled PDF reader. You can protect a PDF with strong encryption, strong authentication, and use their reader, and it will natively talk to the RMS system. Obviously, we'd like to see Adobe support this as well. We are talking with Adobe, but no public news on that. Any questions so far? Okay. All right, now let's talk about a company that actually has some on-premise infrastructure, which is probably virtually every single enterprise that would be interested in using us. And we have a technology we call the connector, and I'm going to show you how this works and what it does for you. So, my build order is a bit odd. So starting out with a very classic AD, Exchange and SharePoint Online, I actually have Azure Active Directory. Virtually everything we do in the Office 365 or the enterprise suites really requires you to federate to Azure Active Directory. That's actually free. Yeah, you can actually get a free account now to synchronize your directories. There's a tool called DirSync, which is a couple of button clicks. I think the latest version even can run under domain controllers as you see fit. And basically, they get a copy of your users, groups, and other objects, properties, and synchronize them to the Azure Active Directory. Or you can run FIM and actually have a much more sophisticated experience to only select differential properties or run more complex filtering rules if you are interested. So we ask customers to federate first. That is free. You get free Azure Active Directory tenant. And now, RMSO is purchasable. You can actually buy as a standalone Azure SKU. You do purchase at the O365 portal. It does not require any of the other services. It does not require Exchange Online or SharePoint Online. It basically costs about $2 a month per user, and that's sort of the list price. Okay, what happens? Well, now, just like before, all of your apps start lighting up with cloud experiences. That the first thing that comes in the cloud experience is your Office, Word, Excel, Outlook, all can now have cloud identities, so you can log into the cloud. In this particular case, I didn't draw the diagram out, but this is an important point. You are not required to push your passwords into Azure Active Directory. You can have the option of what we call password sync, or you can run ADFS. And I'd say it's a good mix of customers who have either password sync, and that's actually a relatively new feature we've launched a few weeks ago, but the adoption's been pretty fantastic. People who choose to do ADFS for authentication back to on-prem. We actually have a surprising number of customers who decided to maintain dual identities. The names will be the same. I'll have Tim at Contoso.com for my on-premise AD identity. I also have Tim at Contoso.com as my online identity, and the user will be responsible for remembering their passwords in both places, assuming they probably make the same one up. Now, the connector. What does the connector do? The connector is a lightweight on-premise role that we have created, which basically allows your on-premise Exchange and SharePoint processes to talk to the cloud as if it was an on-premise service. So it handles your authentication. It presents a similar security signature to any of the other Kerberos or NTLM-based server authentication on-premise. And it essentially proxies those calls from Exchange on-premise to my AADRM service. I'm going to get to it in a few minutes. It's a couple of button clicks. It's probably 10 or 15 button clicks, but it's a seamless walkthrough. It doesn't require you to create any new accounts in the AD. It basically lets you reutilize the existing domain or security groups created for the SharePoint and Exchange on-premise, and connect it to AADRM. So, well, here's the summary. It's effectively an IIS web role. We recommend you run two of them in a sort of a DNS load balance configuration just for high availability, but you can run one to N as you prefer. A big difference, for those of you familiar with the AADRMS product, is this is for the entire enterprise. You do not have to run one of these or two of these per AD forest. This is as many as you like. So this can handle all of the central configuration for one or more resource forests. There's a few QFEs that we need you to apply to your Exchange and SharePoint 2010, 2013, and some registry configuration. We make that as painless as possible. An important point here is your end users, Office, desktops, ISV-enabled applications, still continue to talk to the cloud. So your on-premise server boxes will use the connector, but your end users will actually roam to, or roam's the wrong word, still connect to the AADRM service, and that way you get the full benefits of all the collaboration features. So dropping the connector into your network, and it lights up the Exchange and SharePoint on-premise versions of the features I just showed you. And now, if I share content to my partner companies, they still connect to the cloud. I still get all of the AAD-based federation benefits for authentication and sharing, or secure sharing, without having to touch my ADFS or AAD infrastructure. I think I got ahead of myself. This is how it works. And the two the SKUs that it runs on are Windows Server 08R2. And the CPU burdens are minimal. All the computation for RMS is done either on the Exchange server or in the cloud. So this is just basically a pass-through. So you can use a VM or a relatively inexpensive box. Okay, recap how this works. You can read this, but federate, enable, install, and config configuration in roughly that order. And that's just what I've already mentioned. Okay, well, there's actually a talk that I think is going on concurrently to this one for how to actually set up DirSync and federate. So if this is an interesting thing to you, there's lots of online documentation. The directory synchronization team has put a ton of work in the last several months making that process also simpler. It used to be DirSync was a fairly complex process. We've been chipping away at that pretty aggressively over the last year. Microsoft strategically recognizes federating to the cloud needs to be super painless, super low friction, super cheap, and super secure. So that team is highly, highly chartered to make those experiences great. Okay, I'm not going to bore you with the details. Setting up the connector topology is basically the same as we had it before. You go and enabled. Same process as we just went through for the full 0365 workload. Here's what the connector setup program looks like. You download it. It's a free download. Run the setup program. You actually have two pieces. You have the setup program, and you have a small management utility that lets you go through and reconfigure the product later as you see fit. One cool thing about this is once you configure this connector once, since we recommend you run it in mirrored or dual configurations, network load balance, you don't have to type in any more settings. You have to install it, and it will automatically discover the cloud and download your settings after they've been first set up. So if you install this once, you can install it 100 times more across your enterprise and not have to type in the same information again. I guess there's some licensing terms you have to agree to. Again, we bootstrap all of this information. One interesting thing is we actually have role-based administration of the AADRM service. So you can actually have both global 0365 tenant admins or Azure Active Directory tenant admins having control over your RMS AADRM product. Or you can create dedicated role groups inside of AADRM. And we have some command line PowerShell tools to create those role groups and then narrow the set of administrators who have access to your information protection system. It's installing. You can see there was, and this is just a setup program. So there's virtually no database. This is a completely stateless service. There's nothing to configure or set up or manage on these connectors. Then the configuration, again, force you to log in again. authorizing servers. This basically enumerates the, well, first of all, it makes you choose the type of service you're authorizing, which actually is an important point. I should cover that in more detail. Typically, in my experience or our experience as an enterprise, people run the Exchange service with, you know, high security credentials, and it's a highly managed environment, versus SharePoint may be actually more, there may be more different types of accounts used for SharePoint farms. So we actually separate those two, and the permissions that we grant to these services will vary. We actually give Exchange a much higher level of permission or trust to operate upon encrypted data than we do SharePoint. Is anyone using the file classification infrastructure on Windows Server 2012? Are you guys familiar with that? So you also can configure file classification, which is a fantastic piece of technology. That's just a small kind of a DLP-lite agent that runs on top of Windows File Server, scans your files, and actually can automatically apply policy, retention, or IRM protection to those files based on any number of properties, the owner, some of the basic contents. Kind of the same sort of things, like regular expression matching for phone numbers or credit card numbers. That product also integrates with the connector. You can see it discovered the service group. If you have a group set up for all of your Exchange or SharePoint servers, we can set that up. Once the connector has been created and set up, you have a little bit of work to do for Exchange 2010, 2013. We separate those in two phases. We have learned that the Exchange administration team is often not the same as the information protection administration team, so we try to make it painless to hand that off. You have a little bit of reg key stuff, and right now, This is in private preview starting around July 15th. So these will be privately available QFEs, and then eventually they get rolled into cumulative updates with the service products. This is just a little tool that we help out with, which is from the connector setup. You actually can generate the PowerShell commands that will then create the GPOs that you could use for Exchange and SharePoint to, again, drive down the complexity a little bit and make it easier to hand this off to your colleagues if you do not have access to both systems. Important point, this does not require any AD schema modifications. That's actually another thing we optimized out to further drive the friction down. Configuring the Exchange system, this should look pretty familiar with what we showed earlier. This is Exchange on-premise, so you don't have to do quite as much work to actually enable IRM, but logically the same. And SharePoint, again, the configuration of SharePoint is pretty comparable. This is the SharePoint on-prem secure document library configuration. So there's some other different options, but in this particular case, you can accept the defaults, and you should be good to go. All right, now, cloud-hesitant enterprises without IRM. So this is actually a pretty interesting case. How many of you use hardware security module technology in your enterprise? Okay, one, two, okay. So typically, people will use this who use ADRMS, or much more commonly, people who run their own certificate authorities, their own CAs, will often be hardware-backed for high security PKI installations. Some customers have high bar requirements around how their keys are managed. They may have compliance policies or key generation policies, or they might want to share keys across different applications. From my standpoint, a key is just a piece of cryptographic string. So if you want to generate your own cryptographic strings, that's great. We just have to have a certain key length and randomization, and if you want to do that and never actually let me see it, we're happy. Hardware security modules, just another bit of background. They're actually fantastic pieces of technology. They're either standalone appliance type of boxes or typical PCI-based plug-in card you can put into a server. And they're essentially sealed silicon. They have a processor, memory, and a cryptographic engine. Usually put in some sort of tamper-proof epoxy that if you try to pull off the memory or do something inappropriate, it actually sort of self-destructs. They're actually acid-packed often, so the chipset will just melt down if you peel back the epoxy. They're generally also pretty expensive. So what we allow you to do is if you are a cloud-hesitant enterprise who has no RMS, but you don't necessarily trust that Microsoft should ever see your tenant keys. I can go on and on about how secure we keep your tenant keys inside my data center and how there's operator installation. And me as an engineer, I could never touch any of these things. I don't have any permissions whatsoever to operate upon the data center. But some customers want an even higher level of assurance. So we actually let them, or asked them, to buy an HSM on their premises. That's a box. We typically use Talus. There are some other vendors, but to work with us, we require a Talus box. It's a worldwide company. I think it's 60,000 employees. I don't have much material on the Talus piece, but we do have lots of background on their trustworthiness. Create your key in your HSM on-premise. Purchase the RMS online subscription, like just like we did before. And there's a way to actually specify, and I'll get to it in a few minutes, of actually what we call a BYOK solution for a bring your own key solution. So we actually allow you to bring a hardware-backed key to our hardware-backed key management solutions. And effectively, as you bring that key to the cloud, and I'll get to it in a little more detail, we never see this key in clear text, and our operators have no access to your key whatsoever. There's a secure cryptographic channel which connects your HSM to our HSM. We have a separate vendor who documents that as a secure channel with no access to the root decryption keys for you. And then all of your crypto operations happen in hardware, so when we actually access your content keys to generate on your behalf, it goes into a sealed hardware module. That cryptographic operation happens, we never see your root encryption keys. Then, the other pieces that we ask for, you federate to AAD, we connect to AAD automatically from RMS Online, and now, again, as before, your office applications light up and can start going through the connector or directly from a desktop to the AADRM service. This is the details of the advanced key management. We actually have extensive near real-time logging. One of the key requirements for security-conscious customers is trusting us and make sure there's no key abuse. So we actually publish logs directly into Azure in near real-time fashion. You can audit those. We actually drop them into your own storage, and then we're done. So you can actually write your own code, write your own reports, hire an ISV product to actually do these in real-time monitoring to decide if there's any key abuse happening. So it's a really fantastic, interesting thing we've done here. Some details in the logging. There's some basic tools that we'll get to in a minute. But really, I think for the type of customer who would really care about the BYOK scenario, we would actually recommend some of our ISV partners who will write much richer correlation analyses onto this engine. Okay, how does logging work? To actually do the near real-time logging, we actually require you, the customer, to create your own Azure storage accounts. We don't want to own these. It's like a mail drop for me. I want to drop them into your storage account. I don't want to know anything about it after that. You manage your retention pattern. You manage who can access your logs. You may have an entirely separate group at your company who does auditing, who doesn't share access with your RMS administration. You go to the Azure portal. You have create a corporate account. Go to the storage. Create a storage account. Generally, we want you to create the storage accounts in the same Azure region as your AADRM system. It's not required, but there's a pretty substantial performance impact if you actually don't do it that way. Pretty simple. It's just click on this. You don't have to do anything special. You grab these keys, both the name, which actually is used for the URL addressing, as well as the access key. The access key is a symmetric key. Essentially, that is the way these storage accounts are the encrypted channel is built. I recommend you grab that in a cut and paste operation because we immediately ask you to type into our PowerShell and provide it to us. I guarantee I would be unable to ever type that in correctly myself without some notepad assistance. And you can see now your service is fully enabled for near real-time logging. Every cryptographic operation, every administration operation against your service, whether it's through our admins or your end users, are now being real-time dropped into the storage files, which mostly look like a syslog type of thing. It's a user timestamp, operation type, scenario that they're actually doing, and you can run whatever engine analysis you would like to see fit. You also can get those logs directly. These are Azure blobs, so they're named just by a simple number. If you want to look at them and then unpack them yourself. As I mentioned before, this is a Talus-based solution. Some of my customers do have products like from Safeguard. Safeguard is a fantastic HSM vendor. We just chose to simplify. So if you do want to use the BYOK solution, you can buy a Talus unit for a couple of $1,000s. I think it's like $1,500. If you happen to have a Safeguard unit and you have existing cryptographic keys you want to reuse, you can call Safeguard, get your quorum keys out, and transfer it to the Talus unit. That's a does cost money, but it's a relatively modest effort. We talk about this key ceremony. This has actually changed since I made these slides, but effectively we've been asking customers to fly to Redmond, bring your cryptographic keys however you want. You can drag your tallest unit, you know, your desktop unit there. You can actually put them into a USB key drive, whatever you consider acceptable. And we essentially have our operations team meet you. We'll probably give you lunch. And you have an air-gapped room, so it's offline. You encrypt your keys to our tallest security world and yours. And again, even our operations team in the same room will never have access to that. We give you an HSM device. You configure it with some directions. It goes into that. It synchronizes with our ops team into our Azure backbone. But at no point in time, with no Quorum cards, can our team ever see that key. What I mentioned is we've made some improvements. I don't think it's documented yet, but I think we've been able to now enable this BYOK scenario without actually flying to Redmond. So we actually give you some tools to run this operation on-premise at your own offices. So you don't get free lunch, but you don't have to fly anywhere. These are some tallest commands for creating security worlds. Pretty ugly. I won't go into the boring details unless anyone's really curious. But basically, HSMs are cryptographic devices that are basically based on PKI. So these commands are issued against your own HSM that you have purchased, creates strong security. You can see we require 20 48-bit protection keys in your HSM, overhead command to configure it in a way that we can then use to our software will interoperate with it. And the key transfer is actually how you then take this key from your HSM and synchronize it to our HSM, which is our operator team, and use. One thing, I think we have some materials about this. It is very important, if anyone's considering this, to not lose your key. Because I kid you not, if you use a BYOK scenario and you have a fire, someone leaves, they don't back up your key on-premise, I cannot get that back for you. So you will have a world of unreadable document data if you lose your own key. So that's one of those things. We go through some extensive contract language to really remind customers they have an obligation to not do that. It's by design, out of our power, which frankly kind of worries me. I'm sure if this does happen someday, there'll be some pain for everyone involved. And the last piece I'm just going to talk about briefly is those customers who do have ADRMS. We actually don't have this in the market today, but by the end of the year, we'll start bringing on the first pieces of this to allow you to have a migration path to the cloud. There are features that we're actually building into the cloud-only product that we're not bringing back to the ADRMS product, notably the secure collaboration, notably the mobile device access, that we require ADRMS customers who want those features to essentially federate to the AADRM instance. That relies upon the bring-your-own-key scenario, and it relies upon a few other pieces of technology to allow you to, if you choose, to replicate your infrastructure to online, going to change online, bring your users there, the same diagram we've been talking about for an hour or so. The key management service is what we call the HSM-backed solution that we actually put into our Azure data center. You bring your key there, so now you have a key on-prem used by your ADRMS product. It will be an identical key that we put into the HSM-backed solution. And now, wherever your devices access content or users, whether they are on-premise, whether they're traveling, whether they're partner users, it's all in the same key space. So all of your integrity and encryption is consistent wherever the transaction is resolved. Why would you do this? Well, you get some new features. You get the mobile device support. We've actually built a whole new set of internet endpoints onto the service that actually are much more device friendly. Traditionally, RMS was built on Microsoft SOAP standards, or not Microsoft, but open SOAP standards. REST services, I think, have taken over the majority of the internet world, if those people who are kind of techno-geeky. So we've actually rebuilt the mobile device endpoints in a thinner, lighter, more device-friendly way. This allows you to also maintain your existing on-premise tools. Lots of your legacy BI tools or other tools may not be cloud-ready. They may not be able to authenticate or resolve cloud URLs. So we still allow you to preserve those investments, but get access to the new features. And again, this should look pretty similar, which is federate, BYOK, enable. It's sort of the standard pattern for all these things. Basically, every scenario for AADRM requires federation. And then, of course, as you see fit, you enable your workloads. Now, how do you buy this? On-premise, you actually can talk to your sales account management. It's not public, and it won't be publicized, I think, fully until September timeframe in this price catalog for fiscal 14. Basically, this will be, at worst, cost neutral with your AD/RMS pricing, and quite possibly much, much cheaper. We do allow consumption for free, so that's a difference from the on-prem product. Today, on-premise, we require you to buy a CAL for every user who consumes or publishes content. Online, we only require you to purchase a license for publishing content. Of course, I want every user to publish encrypted content, but that also requires Office 2013 or 2010 Pro Pack. So compared to the on-prem product, you have a little more flexibility in how you build out your licensing. It's also directly included in the Office E3 SKUs. And you also can purchase this as a standalone Azure RM subscription, which would be used for the connector type of scenario we talked about earlier, where you may want to run all of your IT on-premise and only use the Azure AD/RM product just for the encryption services. It works out to be about $2 a month per user for publishers. As I mentioned, consumption inside your enterprise is free, and consumption for your partners and your business partners for individuals is also free. So if you want to share secure email and documents with a business partner, they do not have to purchase AD/RM to read that content. To publish, yes, they have to buy it. We give them a free sign-up experience. I don't think I have a slide view of that, but there is some a web sign-up page, which is actually launching in about 2 weeks as well. We're calling it Microsoft RMS for individuals. We have some kind of advice here. Well, obviously, you know how to buy Microsoft products. You guys are, I'm sure, have been doing that for a year, and your mileage may vary on who you're dealing with. MCS Consulting. Historically, the AD/RMS product was pretty complex to install, so you really were looking to like a kind of often a complex system integrator type of scenario. We've driven that cost down, so now I think some of the high-cost MCS deployments should no longer be required or no longer be necessary. And we actually have some fantastic partners we've been working with around the world to actually make this simpler and better and actually help you with both the directory synchronization, ADFS setup, and RMS configuration. One of my partners here at Synergy, folks, Christian, has been a fantastic help to us all week. And you are welcome to both come to the Ask the Experts session tonight at 6 o'clock. I'll be there. Christian will be there. A few other RMS folks will be there to answer questions. Or send an email to askipteam@microsoft.com. That goes to the core engineering and product management leadership and my team. We all look at these questions, and you typically get a response pretty quickly with, hey, does this work, or how would this happen? And we're all highly motivated to make this great. And the classic call to action, this would be what we were recommending. So anyway, I have a few minutes left here. Questions? Can I clarify or elaborate anything? And now, or I'm happy to stay after for a bit and one-on-one, bring questions up to the front. Anything? Okay, well, thank you for your time.